Say that again for me, Jonathan, just like that.
The spew.
That's fantastic. We should make that the audio clip that opens up the show. Just Jonathan.
Except just
saying,
Jonathan.
This. You do it. When you
the
do
give
it.
Give us a couple takes.
The spew.
I like that.
The spew.
Welcome to The Spew with Daniel Potts and Jackson Hall.
And featuring a guest today.
Jonathan Cooper.
My roommate.
So me and Daniel this week watched The Evil Dead, directed by Sam Raimi, starring...
Fun fact, is the first film ever made.
What? Where did you get this information?
Oh, is it not?
Or at least in terms of... Would you say... Where is it on the scale? Obviously, before that was a joke, a poorly attempted one. Where does that rank on influential first scary movies? Like,
oh, dude, I think it's huge. I really do.
What happened before it?
So the only iconic horror movie classic that I can think of that came before it, just off the top of my head, would probably be the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And that's iconic in its own right, but The Evil Dead, I think there's all these sorts of horror tropes that we groan and roll our eyes at now that when The Evil Dead did them, they were original, and they set the precedent for horror movies in the future. So, for example, you've got a group of college-aged kids out in a secluded cabin in the woods for a night, and then they get terrorized by some sort of demonic presence. Like, just
when we
that
say
that could be a million different horror movies,
yeah,
but
for sure.
The Evil Dead did it first.
Now we got three college guys stuck in a recording room, so does this mean that we're in
this room
of,
is definitely lacking in demonic presence.
I would certainly hope so.
When we say demonic presence, this movie's not, like, this movie's campy. Practical effects, it's goofy. This is not a terrorize your soul type experience. This is just a fun time. Like,
oh yeah,
very much over the top, more zombie like effects going on than demonic effects necessarily.
Yeah.
A lot of like cruddy body horror with just gushing, like you can tell
it's like
super fake looking material.
Bruce Campbell being Bruce Campbell.
Sure.
Bruce Campbell being Bruce Campbell. Very rubbery kind of makeup at times, like ridiculous amounts of gore and blood. To a fun extent, though. I don't think it ever hurts from that. I really think it capitalized on
something. Well, no, the movie's made its name on that.
Yeah,
it's made, it's spawned sequels and spinoffs and remakes and a TV show based off its level of noticeable campiness.
Not to mention inspiring dozens and dozens of other horror movies.
Sure. I do think it has to take some credit from The Exorcist that came out 10 years prior. There's
okay,
a similar
yeah.
aesthetic.
That's a good example of a movie that came out before it.
But that's the only thing I could think of that when people go classic scary movies of all time, that's the only thing I can think of that goes even further back. That's, well, I say that. You have plenty of like black and white options. You have scary,
I mean, there's certainly horror
films
movies
in the horror and or sci-fi genre, which start to bleed more together the further you go back.
Yeah, I don't think you can forget movies like Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like maybe that, and there may be some film connoisseur somewhere that could correct me on this, but I feel like that was really the pioneer of horror as a film genre.
Sure.
Or at least it revolutionized horror filmmaking and took it in a direction that I don't think any other film prior to that, and it came out, what, 1955,
somewhere
in that range. But, I mean, the effects that movie had, like, that almost, like, I don't know, psychological aspects,
yeah.
like, sort of that creation of dread.
Yeah,
the
suspense, the thrill.
Yes, which I definitely do not think Evil Dead is in that wheelhouse. Now, granted, I haven't seen the movie, so I can't.
yeah, we should mention the first movie that we're going to talk about, Evil Dead, Jonathan hasn't seen. And the second movie we're going to talk about, Joker, Daniel hasn't seen. So this episode may rely on me trying to
mediate between
which... I don't know. That may be a task in and of itself, me trying to spur on conversation. That's not one of my
strong points. I'm your very qualified guest from the simple fact I may have not seen Evil Dead, but I do know a lot about Sam Raimi because I am a diehard Spider-Man fan. I grew up on his Spider-Man trilogy. So
that's true. This not only did this set into precedent some horror movie tropes, but it also established Sam Raimi. Exactly, I think that's something to take into account too. It put names like Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi on the map, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And frankly, that's a big thing to do as a. I think this may have been his very first film, and pretty low budget, relatively.
Yeah.
I think I read up on it and it said that they, he started with a very very low budget kind of short film project, that was good enough that. I think a studio brought him on to kind of recreate it in The Evil Dead, which is a really cool kind of backstory, kind of a, what am I trying to say? I guess a model that a lot of film students today hope they could kind of achieve in their own way.
Well, no, yeah. And I have looked into the beginnings of Sam Raimi and how he got started. And that first film that they... put together and like sent to different studios trying to, you know, send out a message like, hey, we can make a scary movie. We can do our own thing. It's interesting. Going before that, Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell, their close group of friends who were instrumental in making Evil Dead, they actually like were so passionate about becoming filmmakers and making this film and creating this vision of theirs. They actually dropped out of high school and they... and they started, you know, working jobs like being busboys and waiters and, you know, just very humble jobs, just trying to get the resources and the things that they needed in order to create this film. And then they created this this short film, very low budget, that became sort of the prototype for The Evil Dead. And they sent it to different studios and then eventually got the green light to make The Evil Dead, which... basically put Sam Raimi, you know, out there and got him and his crew, you know, Bruce Campbell and all them, cemented as legitimate filmmakers. And even though they have a style that many would consider campy, it's very uniquely Sam Raimi. And it's not... A lot of people think that campy, they automatically associate it with bad. But I think that you can do campy in a good way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think Sam Raimi nails that for the most part.
So yeah, if you want to make it in the movie business, drop out of school, kids. I think that's what we can take away from that.
So while y'all have been talking about that, I was trying to find a list of the greatest classic horror movies of all time and find where The Evil Dead ranked on it. I could not find a single list with less than 30 films, all of which would be too many to go through for right now. Rotten Tomatoes has 200.
And, oh, jeez.
And I actually couldn't find The Evil Dead on any of them. But the last thing that I looked at was a list that didn't feature The Evil Dead, but had The Evil Dead 2 listed as number 6.
That's actually interesting. Very because interesting. Last episode, Daniel, you said that we mentioned that we would watch The Evil Dead and then from there, hopefully watch the sequel.
Which we didn't, even though we did watch the trailer, and it looked like it was even more over the top in terms of practical effects. And is there an argument to be made that maybe the second one is what helped cement that reputation?
I have not seen the second one.
None of us have.
None of us have. It looks like we may have our next movie for Spooktober to
We were going to do that anyway, I'm sure.
Does that mean we are for sure watching the final installment, Army of Darkness?
I don't see why not.
Alrighty.
I'm also really intrigued.
I gotta catch up on these. Like these honestly sound like movies that I would enjoy.
So I have seen Army of Darkness, which is unusual for me to watch the final film in a franchise without watching all the previous films. However, I do know from watching it that it takes a completely different turn. It's barely horror. It's more comedy horror than actual.
For Spooktober finale, let's grab a crap ton of snacks, and after we've caught up on the movies, Jonathan can catch up at any point with my Hulu throughout the days, and we could just go on a full binge of Ash versus the Evil Dead afterwards, the TV series with Bruce Campbell that was spawned. Yeah. I suppose.
I am in full support of this. I this sounds like a heck ton of fun. So yeah.
I actually wonder if that show was even well received. I know very little about it. It's something that I've scrolled through so many times on Netflix and didn't even realize that it was connected, because I just wasn't that familiar with the franchise or what even channel that it was on. And it's listed as an American comedy series, and it has a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. So wow. That's
99%.
And that's wow. As a modern TV show, which is very hard to do. A series that ran from 2015 to 2018. So that's pretty.
Oh wow, I didn't know it was
based
that
on characters by Sam Raimi, featuring a much older Bruce Campbell.
Mm-hmm. But speaking of
which I had already said,
movies, TV shows that have spawned from this franchise, I think we should probably mention the. Is it the 2012 remake of the first movie that
which
me and you watched the
Sam
trailer
Raimi
for?
Was in charge Raimi. Of. Raimi. That's what I meant to say. What did I say?
Raimi.
Raining. Whatever.
Raining.
It's got an M.
Yes, but yeah. That would be correct.
just putting that out there.
Where was I? Oh, yeah, the 2012 remake. We watched the trailer for that one just out of curiosity, and it seemed like a pretty basic rehash of the exact same story, which honestly I don't know if that goes. I don't know if I would be into that.
Well, I think it makes a difference that the same creators are behind it.
Sure.
It's definitely a chance. So this is a topic that I love to get into that bleeds into music a little bit. About a year ago, this is a bit off topic, Fall Out Boy kind of had a resurgence. Oh yeah, we're gonna go way off rail here. So y'all remember in like high school when Fall Out Boy had like a resurgence with that like Light It Up song?
Oh,
or
yeah.
I can't remember. And they put out that album Save Rock and Roll that was essentially their reclaim to fame, right? And so that whole album just went viral for a solid couple years. Well, they followed that up a couple years ago with an album called Mania that had a lot of newer style productions. It was terrible. It was not good at all, and it kind of left their rock sound behind. There was a little bit of it there. It was very experimental, but basically people roasted them, and I got really mad about it, because even though it wasn't that great, the lead singer came out and said, so when you're an artist, whether it be in music, whether it be in film, whether it be in standard art, anytime there's a new thing, it's like waking up on Christmas morning to a new toy. You have to use it. You have to see. You have to play with it. And no listener is entitled to a certain sound or a certain thing. You don't have to watch it. You don't have to consume it. Let people have fun and be creative with different things. And so a lot of times when I think these remakes happen, I'm not for remakes in general, but when it is the same creators essentially doing a remaster, like we do in video game cultures, we do remasters of video games.
Oh, yeah.
It's them saying, man, I wish I'd had these toys when I was making this then. And so, yeah, I can't hit that same mark, but why not have fun and make it again with these new toys that I didn't have then?
That's actually a pretty good way to put it.
And here's the thing. You don't have to like it, but you can't fault them for doing it either, because it's just a fun new way for them to experiment with doing it. So it's impossible for it to live up to that first mark. But because it is a new way to do those things, I'd be interested to see it simply because it's the same creative team.
So here's what I would say in response to that. And I think we kind of already touched on this. Jonathan said that campy doesn't always equal bad. In fact, in Sam Raimi's case, campy's kind of his style. And I think the problem with rehashing the same story in a newer way is that we're going to throw practical effects out the window for the newer CGI. And I don't think that's going to be able to capture the same appeal that the original gets, because part of what makes the original so endearing is the kind of cheesy.
Oh, 100%. You know? Like I said, it's impossible for you to recreate that same level of endearment. Like, it's not going to be as appealing. That doesn't mean it's going to be not appealing. And so it's like a medium ground that it's a way for them. It's almost like a Evil Dead. It's not like saying this is a sequel, prequel, remake to Evil Dead. It's almost like an Evil Dead 1.5 situation.
Sure.
And there's no reason for anyone not to do that. If you want to, that's fun. And so it's the kind of thing that it's a movie. It's an hour and a half. So I would sit and be interested just to see, like, for comparison's sake, because it is the same creative team. And obviously in terms of and where the practical effects, so you lose that, but they also get to play more with just better audio specs. And so they're going to be able to make it more terrifying from a less visual standpoint as well. And so, because that's, in today's horror movies live and die on basically the audio technology.
I think my only
that's
fear
what makes
with
them
that,
scary or not.
I think my only fear with that is that, like Jonathan said, these filmmakers in 1980 were so dedicated to making something their own, creating something their own, that they went to extents so far as to drop out of high school, which is extreme. But I fear that by just recreating something, we're losing out on what could be, right? Like, these are creators who can create great things. Like,
well, first off,
already proved it. But
it's the creator's idea. Like, they may not have another idea in the pipeline. And
I know, that's what I'm saying. I'm afraid that if we say, okay, yeah, I'll just eat up the same thing again, we're okaying them when we say that, when they say they don't have another idea. I don't ever want to, as a consumer of pop culture or anything like that, of art, I don't ever want to say, yeah, it's okay that you've run out of things.
Well, they're going to do it, whether you okay it or not.
I know.
And
that's
you
what
can't
I'm,
tell
that's
someone
what, they are
what to
do
be
it.
Passionate about. You can't tell them what projects to want to make.
No, of
and
course
so
not. But they should still want to make something new, I feel like. That's where I'm coming from on this.
Sure, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be allowed to play with what they've also created.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not saying they shouldn't remake it. I'm saying I'm afraid that us just going with that stops them from creating anything new.
But it doesn't. Because it's not like they've remade every film in the franchise. They've spent
but
one
Daniel?
Section out of their entire career remaking that one film.
What's the most recent movie that Sam Raimi's been involved with that's not a remake?
Well,
Swamp. Isn't
Crawl
that the name of the Crawl
is what I was
Crawl.
Thinking of.
Good heavens. Yeah.
Which I didn't see also.
Apparently it got good reviews.
Yeah,
though.
It got it was fun to watch. It was
oh,
the
you
same,
saw it?
Yeah. Saw it in theaters. It was campy and it was fun. And that's the kind of thing I want to see from Sam Raimi.
But you got to see it.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. I'm afraid that if we just keep okaying remakes, and not just Sam Raimi as a creator, but creators in general, right? I think there's a lot of... I'm going to use J.J. Abrams as an example. He can create things. He's a good filmmaker. I really like Super 8. I really like that movie.
That's a good
but
movie.
Because of that, big studios are going to say, hey, we want you to direct Star Trek. We want you to direct Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're missing out on what new things could be created by a creator like J.J. Abrams. That's where I'm
So I believe there's 100% room for both. And I do believe that a creative mind can't overextend. A lot of people will take these remake projects as a chance to give themselves room to breathe and sort of let new ideas come in that off time where they're like, okay, because what you do is you hit sort of like a wall, you hit a writing's block. So as someone who works on music, and you can attest to this too, sometimes you get to a point where just creatively, you just don't know what to do.
No,
you
sure.
don't know what to
yeah,
do next.
Exactly.
And so sometimes it works back Absolutely. To just go back and look over things you've made before, play around with it more, wait for more ideas to come up. And so what I believe is, I don't believe that, so let's say if you had a filmmaker that 1 year they made an original project, 1 year they made a remake, and then back and forth. And it's usually not a one-to-one ratio. It's usually skewered one way or the other, depending on what that director likes to do. But let's say they have a one-to-one ratio. If you take the remakes out, a original isn't going to replace each of those remakes. It's still going to be the same amount of original content, but the remakes are there during the downtime to keep content coming out. Because you have to have that time to sort of, you're going to hit a wall eventually. And a lot of times that's what a creator will do, is play with what they've already created in those times.
I think that's true. But, oh man, do I really want to open this can of worms? Do I want to open this can of worms?
Go ahead and open that can of worms.
Okay,
this is for Jonathan.
Disney. Their obsession.
They
with,
definitely
with
have gone and, over the top with remakes recently.
And Disney themselves. Now, Pixar is still putting out original content. But
with the occasional sequel here and there.
Yeah, the occasional sequel, but
which
they
recently have been better than the original ones.
Yeah, with the exception of the Cars sequels, whenever they do a sequel, they usually do it because they think they actually have a legitimate story.
Whoa,
to tell.
Now. Cars 2 is a cash grab. Cars 3 is not the same
yeah,
situation.
Cars 3
is one of their high marks. It really is. That's a strong film.
Nah, I mean, I don't think it was amazing. I certainly think...
Well, I mean, you may not, but I'm saying in the scale of the ones that have been praised and the ones that have helped Pixar stay on top, Cars 3 is one of those, like, objectively, it's been helping them.
Yeah, I think... Cars 3 is a good movie. I just don't think it's a great movie, but...
I loved it.
No, yeah, but in looking at Walt Disney Pictures itself, they are only remaking their old stuff, and...
Long time since I've seen the Disney logo come over, like, just a new, like, Jerry Bruckheimer, Pirates of the Caribbean kind of franchise kind of thing. Like, you haven't seen any
which
of those
Which they
Spawn
are doing,
recently.
What is it, the Jungle Cruise?
Which
I guess
which,
is...
Dwayne Rock Johnson, yeah.
Which technically is the same amount of stuff to go off of that they had for Pirates of the Caribbean, and that worked out well. But they also tried to do that with Haunted Mansion, and it did not go well.
Yeah.
And if I had to guess whether Jungle Cruise is going to go one direction or the other, I would say it's going to go more towards Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. Parts of the Caribbean, like, was an absolute anomaly.
They struck gold with Johnny Depp, who was not that big of a deal yet.
Well,
and
I don't know about that.
So at the time that he was cast... He was a name, but so this is a fun story. Around the time that he was cast for Curse of the Black Pearl, he was also in the running to be in the Brothers Grimm film alongside. So
is Matt Damon in that one?
Matt Damon and Heath Ledger were the two in that.
That one's obscure now, you know what I mean?
I love that movie. It's super weird. But Matt Damon and Heath Ledger, I can't remember which one beat out the other for Johnny Depp, but Johnny Depp originally had one of the roles alongside one of the other. And Curse of the Black Pearl hadn't come out yet, and they decided to give the role to the other lead because Johnny Depp wasn't relevant enough. And then Curse of the Black Pearl came out the next year, and they were like, shoot. And that movie was huge for him, and he carried those movies. And then Eddie Murphy just couldn't
do
the same.
I don't know. I wouldn't go so far as to say he carried
the movie. Oh, no, there's
the
other
because,
strong people in that franchise, but here's the thing. Without Johnny Depp, those movies aren't successful.
Well, no, yeah.
Which is the definition of carry.
Well, no, yeah.
You can carry and the other pieces be helpful.
Well, I think that Curse of the Black Pearl maybe could have still been successful. It would have been missing a huge element of magic with Johnny Depp.
I think that movie would be fine and maybe a fun weekend watch. That movie would not be near the scale of importance that it has to
An argument can be made for that, but like I do think Curse of the Black Pearl is one of the best adventure movies ever made.
I would not disagree. That's one of my
I love that movie so much.
But Johnny Depp is responsible for over half of that.
I don't know if I want to say half, but definitely a huge portion of it. I mean, Jack Sparrow he has become one of the most
original
iconic
creative
movie
part
characters
of that movie. If you base it just around, you know, your typical love story of Will and Elizabeth
Swan,
it's suddenly not near as innovative.
So
it's fun and it maybe does well. It's got the Disney name, but like half a year after it's been out, no one remembers that movie and no one cares about it. Johnny Depp is what made that turn into a franchise.
So to relate this convo back to creativity and new ideas and remakes and sequels and hopefully maybe horror as well, because we are going to keep moving.
Oh, yeah, this is spooky.
I'm trying to read the room here.
Well, Curse of the Black Pearl's got some spoopy moments for middle school kid, I suppose.
It's got heckin' skeleton
It's got
pirates,
some deadness.
You know?
I think
spooky,
I'd rather
scary,
see
skeletons and okay.
to relate this back to kind of a horror element, I think I'd rather see a creator like M. Night Shyamalan create something like Signs that falls a little flat, but is original and his own, rather than see something like Glass, where he kind of plays off of the remake / sequel
franchise building.
Sure, I definitely get that. I mean, that's a subjective opinion, but it's one that I fully understand. That's just going to come down to the viewer and what the viewer wants.
Sure.
The viewer's either going to want new characters or they're going to want to see continuations of their beloved characters.
And that's I think a good point to make there is that what works with a vast majority of people is reusing.
Continuing.
Yeah. And I think that's evident in obviously, the biggest one, the Marvel franchise. Like, we're certainly getting new things with the Marvel franchise, especially with like Phase 4 that's going to be releasing a lot of new things. But at the same time, we are seeing the same characters, the same few, not even few actually, honestly. There's quite a bit now.
They've expanded their roster quite a bit in years recent, but...
there definitely is a reusability there, a recyclability, if that's even a word, or if I just made that up.
We make up words on this podcast all the time.
Yeah. I'm totally fine with
it. Normally it's me, and so I'm glad that it's you, so...
Making up words.
What was the word that you said that was in question?
Recyclability.
I'm going to look it up while
Jonathan
responds.
If I had just gone with it and hadn't called attention to it, we maybe...
That's what we also do on this podcast. We draw attention to our mistakes.
Yes. See, like, everybody knows what that word
Yeah, like, you
means.
Know what it would mean. Yeah, exactly.
So I don't think people would, you know, be too up in arms about it. But, you know, whether it's technically a word or not, like, eh, whatever.
So I'm glad that our conversation kind of steered itself towards this idea of remaking or reusing... either iconic characters or iconic symbols even, because that's kind of something I wanted to touch up on with our next film that we'll talk about, Joker. This came out recently, a lot of hype around it. I think it's definitely one of DC's best movies today.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would wholeheartedly agree.
A big movie being talked about right now, in part because... Maybe this is just me, but does it feel like this fall has just kind of been bleh in terms of film offerings? There have not been a whole lot of big...
I can't really think of any...
Big pulls. If we're talking post-It Chapter 2, if we're talking about post that, like just stuff that everyone is dropping and talking about, Joker's the only thing I can think of that's like, you know, front page of your pop culture magazines.
Well, I believe the new Terminator movie comes out next week, which, from what I understand of that, it's kind of like an overhaul of the franchise.
Haven't they done that three times?
No, yeah. So, basically, James Cameron, who, you know, made the good Terminator movies, is coming back and producing this one. And here's the thing. I've recently watched the first Terminator movie. I really liked it. And I need to see Terminator 2. Everyone says that it's a great action movie. Some say it's one of the best action movies ever made. And I'm like, well, heck, I really need to see this movie. So I want to see that and then see this other movie, which, like, early reviews are coming out. And they're saying that even though, you know, this compliment isn't saying much, looking at... You know, past Terminator sequels, they're saying it's the best Terminator movie since Terminator 2, which I love a good action movie. I like to see stuff blow up, so want to see Terminator 2 and then see that movie. But that's one that could have some pull at the box office, may have some potential there, but
yeah,
probably not groundbreaking, probably not.
Sure,
but. A fun time at the movies, probably so.